since I've been making content on real estate and travel and how like cohesive they are, a lot of people are becoming interested. They're like, you're right. They do go well together. I just need to learn. But I'm so busy. When can I learn? I was like, just take it one step at a time. Just get one credit card bonus and just learn how to transfer it.
Hey there, points people. You just heard a clip from Jaina Ann. Jaina is a real estate investor, midterm rental co-host, business funding coach, and travel hacker. She does all of this while working her W-2 as a public health professional. In this episode, Jaina discusses how real estate investors can use credit cards and points to travel luxuriously. She shares her personal experience of earning points from real estate investing and using points to book a luxurious trip to Italy, including a business class flight and a stay near Lake Como. She also provides tips for traveling in the Lake Como area and advice for real estate investors looking to earn points more efficiently. If you're interested in earning points through real estate investment, consider the American Express Business Gold Card, especially if you run any ads for your business. This way, you can easily earn 4 points per dollar of ad spend. If you decide to apply for the Amex Business Gold Card or any other card, never apply directly through Google. Always use a friend or creator's referral link. And if you're interested in supporting this show when you apply for your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards. And if you're not sure what card is right for you, I offer free credit card consultations at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. And we have the links to the Amex Business Gold Card and the free consultation form for you in the show notes as well. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipino-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking. Hey, Jaina, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Hey, Julia, thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited to have you here and to talk about how real estate people can get lots of free trips just from allocating their expenses around the correct way. Before we jump into that, tell us a little bit about you. Did you get into points first or real estate first?
That's a great question. So technically, I got into points first back in 2010 when I first got the Chase Sapphire Reserve card. And I got the 100K signup bonus, and I used it all through the travel portal on like two nights on one hotel. Obviously, the worst thing that you could do. And I thought I was so dope. I was like, yeah, I got these two nights for free. So technically, I started using points and miles first. When I got into real estate, it was December 2021. And that's when I was actually at the same time getting more educated in the points and miles space. And during that same time is when I learned, oh, you should probably transfer your points to a hotel if you're going to book it. So I would say it's right around the same time, around 2021, when I got into real estate and also points and miles.
At least you didn't spend it all on magazines.
Yeah, true. Yeah, thank goodness.
So when you started getting more into points and more into the real estate space, what did you notice was like the main problem and the biggest thing that people in real estate were doing wrong when it came to points? Was it using stuff through the portal, or was it even before that, like they don't even know this exists?
So I would say there was a majority of people having like two issues with real estate and using points and miles. The first one is just not knowing that this whole realm exists and that real estate investors are in the optimal position to earn tons of points and miles. But the second one that I see often is they would just use it for cash back. Because they're like, oh, yeah, I could use it at Lowe's and it would, you know, supplement my material costs, or I would just use it on a new Apple product. So I saw a lot of real estate investors using it for cashback.
Why are real estate investors in the optimal position to use credit cards to earn a lot of points if usually you can't put a new house or an investment property or land on a credit card? So how are they in the optimal position?
For me personally, I think it's because of business credit cards. So a lot of times, like, for example, when I buy a new property, I typically open a new LLC, and that includes opening up a new business checking account and then opening up a new business credit card. So often, especially if you're trying to scale, if you're buying multiple properties, you're already in a position to apply to a new business credit card just for the sake of keeping your books clean, right? So that's number one. It's literally you're already opening business accounts and business credit cards. Number two, I find that real estate investors are a little bit more savvy when it comes to understanding credit. right? We understand that the credit score is really important, especially because we're getting loans from banks, right? So the foundational knowledge is there for credit cards and just to understand leverage and using other people's money. And then thirdly, it's because we have so many expenses. I mean, not every real estate investor has a ton of expenses depending on what they invest in. But for the most part, it's really easy for a real estate investor to accrue a lot of expenses that they're maybe paying with cash or paying with someone else's money. But instead, if they just use credit cards as a pass-through and pay it off as they normally would, they could earn so many points. So that's why I find that real estate investors are literally in such a great, great position for points and miles.
What kinds of expenses are the ones that they can be putting on credit cards? Because again, you can't really just put a mortgage on credit cards most of the time.
Yeah, so it really depends. So for example, if someone has a strategy in real estate where it's like called the BRRRR strategy, where essentially they're rehabbing it, they could put a lot of their rehab and renovation materials on a credit card. So if they're involved, you know, firsthand, you go to Lowe's, you go to Home Depot, and you buy your materials, put it on the credit card, and that's just normal spend without accruing any additional fees. Another thing is if someone's like in short-term rentals or midterm rentals through Airbnb or VRBO and they have to furnish their entire rental property, buying furnishing expenses is typically something you could easily rack up 10, if you have a really fancy one, 20K on your credit card, just normally buying through Amazon, Target, wherever they get their furnishing. So it just really depends. Some people would even put their property taxes, right? Of course, that would accrue a fee. But if you're working towards a sign-up bonus and you realize that that sign-up bonus offsets maybe the 3% fee of paying your property taxes, it's worth it for some people.
How can just normal homeowners kind of use these same strategies if you're not necessarily in the real estate game yet, but you're like, well, I just have my primary residence. Is there a way that normal homeowners can take advantage of these strategies as well?
Yes. So new homeowners could do the similar thing with furnishing, right? When I say like with credit card points, it's usually meaning a sign-up bonus for a new credit card, because that's when maybe certain fees that accrue will offset with the new sign-up bonus. So if someone just bought a home, of course, they're going to have furnishing costs. So that's one way to just use your normal credit card spend, especially for one that doesn't have an annual fee. You know what I mean? If you're not using it too often, because furnishing is only a one-time thing, but it still could be worth it if the sign-up bonus is elevated and it's really good. And then I've also seen other people pay their property taxes for a sign-up bonus. So those are opportunities for high cost for normal homeowners to be able to use credit cards as a pass-through to earn tons of points and miles.
When real estate investors are getting into the credit card game, what do you think are some of the best credit cards that they should look into in order to earn points on these different expenses that they're probably going to have?
I personally think the Chase Business Inc. Unlimited. And the reason why I say that over the cash, even though they both have, you know, no annual fee, is one, there's leverage involved. And real estate people love leverage. They love other people's money, right? So they have that, you know, 0% APR for 12 months that they could use for leverage or not. Two, it's a Visa as opposed to American Express. A lot of the times when real estate investors are working with different vendors, maybe for rehab, American Express is not accepted too often, but it just really depends. So that's why I would still say, you know, Chase Inc. Unlimited. And then also it's unlimited. So that's why it's better, in my personal opinion, as opposed to Amex Blue Business Plus, where you can only get 2 points per dollar up to 50K annually. And a real estate investor could easily get over 50K in spend for 1 year. So that's why I would say that particular card is a great starter card for real estate investors.
What are your thoughts on the Chase Inc. Business Unlimited, which earns 1.5 points everywhere, versus something like the Capital One Spark or Capital One Venture X for business that earns 2 points per dollar everywhere, but has different pros and cons? How would you think about those two cards compared to each other?
Excellent. So personally, for me, I know that recently the Capital One Spark card says it's not reporting your business, you know, your business to your personal credit, but there are data points still that's showing that Capital One card is reporting to personal credit. So for me, especially being in the business funding space, I'm really big on separating business and personal credit to keep your credit score as clean as possible. So that's why for the Spark card, I kind of stay away until we know for sure that it's not reporting to your personal. Plus, if you apply for a Capital One card, you get 3 hard inquiries on all the credit bureaus, and that's just not a good look. That's not going to help your credit score if you're trying to get multiple loans, multiple properties. It's really just going to hit you with that 3 credit bureau pull. And then Capital One Venture X, again, personally, I like to keep business and personal separate, because if you have even a 50K, like Capital One is not known for giving high credit limits, right, in the first place. So if you're going to have a really big expense, your utilization is going to be so high on that Venture X. And then if you're over 30%, that's a red flag to the bank showing that you're maybe desperate for credit and it's going to lower your credit score. So that's why I really try to keep business and personal credit separate when it comes to real estate.
Are there any other cards that you would recommend other than the Chase Inc. Business Unlimited that are particularly good for real estate investors and for different styles of real estate investing, whether it is short-term rental versus fix up and flip or long-term rentals or something else? Are there different cards and different strategies that tend to work better alongside different real estate investment strategies?
Absolutely. So typically for me, if you're keeping it simple, that Chase Inc. Unlimited is good. But if you wanted to take it a notch up and earn a little bit more points for your regular spend, I would say the Amex Business Gold. And the reason because of that is because it earns 4 points per dollar on gas. And a lot of real estate investors are driving for dollars, right? They go to a lot of networking and meetups and different kind of events where they're constantly driving. So that gas multiplier is very valuable. Another one is with the business gold is you have that 4X on dining. And I find myself personally going to like a lot of business meals or meeting with potential clients, meeting with other investors over meals. So that multiplier would be really helpful as well. And I like how it adjusts like your top two in whichever category you spend the most on for the Amex gold. And what I love about a lot about the Amex gold in business is it's standalone because you could transfer it to transfer partners and it's not as crazy high as the Amex Platinum. So it really depends on whether an investor would like to travel like in luxury with a higher, you know, Amex Platinum card. But otherwise, I think the gold Amex Business Gold is excellent too for real estate investors.
What are some of the main hangups that real estate investors have when it comes to using credit cards for these types of business ventures? Is it similar to just the regular hangups that people get from the personal side before getting into the points game of like, oh, I don't know how it's going to affect my credit, or like, I don't want to open up 20 cards. Is it the same hangups, or is there a completely different set of risks and concerns when it comes to doing this for real estate investing?
I think it really depends on the investor. So if someone is starting out as a new investor and they don't know much about credit themselves, of course, that's going to be a similar hangup to, you know, regular people getting to the points and miles game. But one of the things I feel is a little bit of a hang up for real estate investors is just like another thing they have to learn. Real estate investors, they're just like all over the place, you know, doing rehabs, getting loans, looking for deals, networking. It's just another thing to add to their list of stuff to do and things to learn that might seem like a little bit of a barrier for people to enter points and miles, so that they're just like, you know what, I don't want to do this. I really don't care. I don't need to travel. This isn't that, because it's just another thing for me to do and I'm already so busy. So that's what I find is a little bit of a hang up for real estate investors. But, you know, once they get over that hump and realize, you know, you could have just two cards, that if you know how to use those two cards, you're solid and you'll be able to earn a lot of like low cost, if not free travel.
I love that. A lot of people are like, oh, well, if I was spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, I would open dozens of cards a year to meet sign-up bonuses all the time. And as we've mentioned on multiple episodes on this show, most of the business owners who are at that level where they're spending and earning hundreds of thousands have an actual business to run. They're not going out and trying to churn through sign-up bonuses. They're usually like, what's like my three card strategy to just have this as a cherry on top of making real money? And I think the exact same is true for the real estate community as well.
Exactly.
Does the real estate community run into any problems with like over leveraging if they're like, oh, we'll get a whole bunch of these 0% APR cards, and then suddenly like something happens to the housing market or something? How do you hedge against that?
So that definitely comes with a lot of awareness and knowing your exit plan. So typically with real estate investors, they'll run their numbers to make sure the deal works. So if for me personally, if I don't have my own funds to be able to personally guarantee a property, I'm not going to introduce a new risk of a new credit card, because you don't want to be caught up in having this credit card. Now you need to pay off. And once that 0% APR interest period is over, you have an incredibly huge interest rate, right? So personally, for me, it would be understanding your numbers at first and knowing an exit strategy that you can actually personally guarantee. Because at the end of the day, with business credit cards, you are the guarantor, right, of the debt. So it's essentially using the credit cards in a way where you understand it's just a pass-through. You know that the numbers work. You have the capacity to pay it off, rather than leveraging it for a particular reason. So it just really depends on understanding your numbers and analyzing your deals.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. For those real estate investors who are also landlords, where you're doing more of a long-term rental strategy, What are your guys' thoughts on the build card? Because from a renter side, I love it because I earn points for paying rent. From a landlord side, it doesn't really affect you too much at all. It's just one more thing to process, but you don't really need to pay anything to make this available to tenants. You don't really earn points from the landlord side. Do landlords have any particular opinions on the built card? Like, does it help their tenants pay rent on time more likely or anything else like that?
I've actually had this discussion recently with one of the landlords in Evansville. And it just really depends on the person because, like you mentioned, it allows people to pay on time. But another concern is like, are you attracting a renter who is dependent on credit that may be a little bit riskier down the line that might default or might have trouble paying because they're over leveraged with the built card? Again, it really comes to like personally understanding your own finances when it's using the built card as a pass through. So on the landlord's perspective, it really depends. Some people don't care if they get paid, they get paid. Others, maybe they're looking a little too into it because sometimes with change, people don't like that. And if they're hearing, oh, they're using a credit card, that must mean they're risky just because credit cards get a bad rep for people who are anti-credit card. So I've seen both sides. Personally, I think the built card would be incredibly useful. I know I say, you know, business credit cards, keep it separate. But one exception I would make to use a built card is if I was doing Airbnb arbitrage and we are renting out an apartment building and then arbitraging it for Airbnb, that's when I would use the built card and use my personal, you know, credit for that card because you're just accumulating so many points, especially having access to American Airlines, you know, as a transfer partner that is, and Hyatt, you know, that's just so, so valuable. So that's when I would be open, even as a landlord, to use a personal credit card for apartments.
Yeah, some of those transfer bonuses are amazing. Like that Virgin Atlantic one where I think it was 125% bonus. And my husband and I got business class flights from London directly back to Las Vegas. I think we spent less than 30,000 points per person one way for that 10-hour business class flight and Virgin Atlantic upper class. So I'm very excited for that.
That's crazy.
Are a lot of landlords and people in the real estate space anti-credit card? And if so, is that just like the influence of Dave Ramsey or what's going on there?
Well, I wouldn't say they're anti-credit card. I feel like it just really depends on the person because at the end of the day, real estate is kind of anti-Dave Ramsey and the fact that you're using so much debt, right? He's more like pay it all in cash, don't get any debt. It's just all personal choice. I wouldn't say people are anti-credit card. It's more of just like not an awareness, like they don't have the awareness to understand how they could use it effectively. I think it's more so just that knowledge base that they need to attain in order to figure out, oh, this goes very smoothly with my normal, you know, cost of doing business. So that's what I've seen. But, you know, since I've been making content on real estate and travel and how like cohesive they are, a lot of people are becoming interested. They're like, you're right. They do go well together. I just need to learn, but I'm so busy. When can I learn? I was like, just take it one step at a time. Just get one credit card bonus and just learn how to transfer it. Just like one skill. And that's all you need to do. And just find a simplified way for you to understand that, hey, I just need to use this card for rehab, then use this card for everything else. And then it's done. You're good to go.
If you're looking to earn more points and miles, there are usually two main ways to get there. The first one is with credit card sign-up bonuses, where you can easily earn tens of thousands of points by putting your expenses on a new credit card. If you're in the market for a new credit card, we offer free credit card consultations and provide you with personalized recommendations based on your particular travel goals, budget, and lifestyle at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. We have links to the free consultation form for you in the show notes. And now, back to the show. So we've talked about people who are in real estate getting into the points game. For people who are in the points game, and are thinking, okay, well, maybe it makes sense if I just like get into real estate investing. Is it a good idea to do that just to earn more points? Or what would your advice be to points people who are like, oh, like, tell me more about the real estate game?
Personally, I disagree because at the end of the day, like you mentioned a lot, Julia, real money is always better than fake money, right? And in real estate, you're getting real money as opposed to points and miles. It's not true money. So if the points and miles person, and I do know points and miles people who are trying to get into the real estate game, if they already have the foundational knowledge, I think it's a great opportunity because now they know how to combine the two. But if you're going in purely with the sake of just getting points, I don't think that's a good idea because that's just a different perspective that might bite you in the butt. You know what I mean? If you're just trying to accrue points through real estate, it really should be about building assets, at least for me personally, building wealth, increasing your net income, your portfolio, as opposed to just getting a bunch of free flights.
For sure. I've seen points people who have done
all sorts of like, oh, I'm going to start this side gig so I can earn more points. There's easier ways to earn more points. And if you want to start a side gig or a business or get into real estate investing or something else, do it with the intent of like treating it like a real business and having your revenues exceed your expenses so that you can have some profit and put money first. And if you can do that and your cash flows all make sense, the points are just going to be a cherry on top. But as somebody who tried to get into dropshipping just to earn more points off of it and definitely did not come out ahead, don't start a business. And again, as somebody who started GeoBreeze as a travel agency just to get business cards and did not intend on this actually yielding any income, focus on business first, focus on real money, and then the points just roll in after that if you can get your regular business foundations all set. So what are some of the cool things that you've been able to do with points that you've earned through your real estate investing?
Yeah, absolutely. So recently, well, back in April, I was able to take Emirates business class, you know, from JFK to MXP, that fifth freedom route before the devaluation. So I think I spent 72,500 points, and all of those points were accrued from a rehab that I got a commercial loan on. So just really briefly, the commercial loan essentially gave me upfront the cost for the purchase price and rehab so that I was able to open up business credit cards to get elevated signup bonuses at the time, which I used to go to Italy. So I only opened two. That was the Chase Inc. Unlimited when it had an elevated 90K signup bonus and the Amex Business Gold card that had an elevated 110K signup bonus. So that's significant for not even using my own money. I literally just used credit cards as a pass-through, and that got me that round trip Emirates Business Class flight, you know, from JFK to Milan. And then I also was able to book in Lake Como Grand Hotel Victoria, that Hyatt property there as well, for 3 nights. And that was completely free. Well, that was 21 euros for the city taxes for 3 nights with that really nice luxury hotel, which was amazing. So I was just able to do it just from a rehab. And I had this really unique loan. And that's when it really clicked for me in April, where I was like, I need to share this information because so many of my friends investing can do this too. They could absolutely do it because they're doing similar loans that I have, specifically in the Midwest. So why not get, you know, very, very low cost vacations out of it? So once I did that, now I was like, okay, I'm already going next week to Secrets Impressions Moshe, which was from a renovation of my third property. So I got, you know, 3 free nights before the devaluation of Hyatt, fortunately.
I probably should have asked this earlier. What does rehab mean for all of those of us who don't speak real estate?
Oh, of course, my bad. So rehab just essentially means doing any kind of renovations to the property, whether you're changing out the flooring or fixing the doors, putting in new windows. It's just a generic term meaning that you're going to add value to the property by fixing it up to make it nicer.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit more about how you booked the Italy trip. How far in advance did you have to book this? Where did you book it through? How many points did it cost? Kind of, if somebody wanted to recreate this trip, how would you recommend they go about doing it?
Absolutely. So I was able to find a word space for two people about 6 months in advance because my rehab costs, it didn't even take me the 3 months needed to meet minimum spend. I got it the first week because my realtor is also my general contractor and he lets me pay rehab through PayPal to meet minimum spend. So it's pretty quick for me. So what I did was I transferred the majority of my American Express points and a little bit of Chase over to Emirates Skywards to be able to book that round trip Emirates ticket from JFK to Milan. I did separately fly to JFK with my own money. I think I had points maybe that I used a little bit, but essentially for that particular flight, that was still through the rehab. And then I transferred, it was only 87K points from Chase to Hyatt to book 3 nights at Grand Hotel Victoria. And that came with free breakfast and it came to like access to the biggest spa on Lake Como. And I just couldn't believe it. As you know, it's like you get way more value internationally a lot of the times with these point transfers than domestically. So I was just like really shocked because it was my first time taking business class ever. I wasn't able to do it up until now when I started real estate and really understanding points and miles. That was literally my first business class flight and it had to be Emirates. Oh my gosh, I don't know. It's kind of hard to top, but yeah, that's how I was able to book it, just by transferring points from the renovation.
Did you guys take a train or a car from Milan over to Como? How did you do that part of the trip?
Yeah, so the hotel was able to arrange a car from the airport to Lake Como.
That's awesome. So you didn't have to drive yourselves. You had a driver who was able to do it for you.
Yeah, and it's awful to go in there because it's so windy. It takes a long time to drive into Lake Como. So glad we had a driver because the streets are so narrow.
We took a train from Milan and we just went to the very southern point, which is like the most touristy area of it all. And we just did a day trip. But yeah, I wouldn't want to drive on those roads. And every car in Italy is a manual. And I don't know how to drive.
Me neither.
Tell us more about your Italy trip. Like, tell us about the hotel and how you booked that. And if somebody wanted to recreate that experience, did you get free breakfast? Did you not need free breakfast because you're in Italy? So who wants to eat in a hotel? Tell us more about that experience.
Yeah. So it was definitely one of the most luxurious experiences I've ever had because I've been to Italy before, but and also to Milan, but I haven't been to Lake Como. So that's how I wanted to experience Italy. I always typically like to do a different city anytime I travel. So I didn't have any Hyatt status. I had none. And I still got free breakfast. I guess it was because it was a nice hotel and that's what they just offer. That just goes to show, like, for those boutique Hyatt hotels, it just really depends on the hotel, what you'll be able to get. So it was a buffet breakfast. And we found that as Americans, we were the only ones eating early. I don't know. It was kind of weird. I was like, why isn't there anyone here? And then they're like, oh, look at these Americans wearing their gym clothes after going to the gym was really weird for them. Because I guess athleisure is not a thing in Europe from what I hear. But yeah, all you can eat. Just imagine, like, I would get like 3 cappuccinos just because it's free. Why not? Obviously, I was really hyped up. I should have had the cappuccinos before the workout. My bad. I had it reversed. But we had always had free breakfast. And the hotel was in the Menaggio side of Lake Como. I didn't know that there's all these little cities. And I didn't know Bellagio was in Lake Como. So we took a day trip there. All you do is use these like ferry boats that cost, I don't know, like €5 or something like that. And what I realized about Bellagio, it looks nothing like Vegas. Like Vegas looks like Rome. Vegas Bellagio looks like Rome. Bellagio looks very, almost like Seville in Spain, more like narrow buildings, narrow walkways, very hilly, very romantic. One of the things I didn't like though is they stopped lunch like at 2 p.m. and we got there at 1:45. And we're like, oh my God, I'm so hungry. So if you go to Bellagio, make sure you go early because they stop for lunch at 2 p.m. and probably don't open up until like 5:30 p.m. So they have this time that's like no food's available essentially. So Bellagio was really beautiful. It really only takes a day to walk that area, but it was nice having a base in Menaggio because it wasn't so crowded. The majority of people in Bellagio were all tourists. And I saw that they were actually building, I want to say, St. Regis or Four Seasons in Bellagio. So that should be really, really nice. What I loved about the Grand Hotel Victoria is they had the largest spa in all of Lake Como. And that is literally the nicest spa I've ever been to in my life. Not only that, it was free for guests. Again, I have no Hyatt status. And I was like, are you sure you want to give this to me? I don't got status. Are you okay that I'm going to go for free? We went every day because it's so slow. It's very slow in Lake Como, not much to do. So we're like, let's go to the spa. My favorite part, first of all, nicest spa I've ever been to. There's so many different water situations, whether it's scented, different pressure, different temperature. But they had this hot and cold foot spa where you literally walk through a hot portion, then walk through a cold portion, then a hot portion and a cold portion, which was amazing. So if you ever go to the hotel, start with the cold version, because if you go in hot first, it's so painful that it's like unbearable. So just pro tip, start with the cold and then end with the hot. Do not start with the hot. But I just couldn't believe, again, because it was really my first luxury international experience, that it started off with such like a high mark, with such a nice hotel, free breakfast, free spa. We got upgraded just because I used one of your email templates and it worked. You know, they're like, oh, we're going to upgrade you to this view, this partial view of the lake. I'm like, awesome. They gave us free snacks. I was just in disbelief because it just seemed too easy. It was like too easy to get upgraded. It was too easy to get all these extra amenities. The gym was nice. No one was there. So we just had this new gym to ourselves. So absolutely amazing experience in Lake Como. Definitely recommend that route, you know, which you could still relatively find good award space between JFK and MXB.
What time of year did you take this trip?
April.
Is that a good time of year to go? Was it particularly chilly? Was it warm? Like, is that, how would you recommend?
I would go a little bit warmer weather because we didn't use a pool. It was too cold and it was a nice pool. What I've heard from people is that Lake Como is not the best lake to swim in. You know, it's like glacier water. And apparently there's a lot of history with stuff being dumped in there. So people say don't swim in Lake Como, but the pool was so nice at the hotel. We didn't use it. It was just too cold to use it. So I would suggest closer to the summer, even June, but it's don't get too much into the summer because it gets really humid. So I would say like June, May would be a better time to go.
Yeah, I would recommend the same. I think it was around May when my husband and I went to Italy, and we only spent a day in Lake Como. We mostly did Milan and a little bit of like Bologna, Verona, those other northern Italian cities. And it was like cute sweater weather in May up there because you're in the mountains a little bit. So it's not like really hot like Rome gets or like the southern coast of Italy gets. It's a relatively small country, but there's so much variance in the climate depending on where you are in Italy and the time of year. But I was thinking like, oh, April in Como sounds like it might be a little bit chilly. And
yeah, it was. It was a little bit.
Yeah. Because you also mentioned like, and there was no one at the hotel. I'm like, was it like off season? Was it? But it wasn't rainy or anything, just kind of chilly.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But Bellagio was really packed. I guess just on the Menagio side, there was just nobody.
I wonder if it's that way all year round where everyone's like, oh, I've heard of Bellagio because of the Las Vegas hotel and just nobody goes over to Menagio side. I wonder if that's the case.
There's nothing to do in Menagio, really. There's like a couple restaurants. That's it.
Is it more just for people who want to get away from it all or like who would go there?
I saw actually more older couples at the hotels, probably just want a little bit of distance from like the noisiness of Bellagio. There's like a little plaza and it's nice. There's more people in that plaza, but I feel like it's people who don't want to be in the hustle bustle of Bellagio and just want a little bit more peace.
That makes sense. Any other tips for somebody who wants to go visit the Lake Como area? What to do, what to see, what to eat, where to stay? Any other tips for somebody who's like, oh, sounds like a cool trip I want to do?
Yeah, I would absolutely recommend that Hyatt Hotel Grand Hotel Victoria, because even though it still went, I think it went up a category to 7. I think it maybe was 6 when I booked. It's still for the value you get. Like I said, I had no status and you were already getting your breakfast for 2 people. You know, you could exercise. You have a spa every day. So I would definitely say Menagio. And it's only like a 15-minute boat ride to, you know, go to Bellagio. But I do recommend taking one of those Italian boats and doing a tour to see all the architecture and like the famous people houses and see where Star Wars was filmed and see a lot of the history of Lake Como, because it's a really unique place. I didn't realize how close it was to Switzerland, you know, and they're like, oh, just look over there. That's Switzerland. And you're like, oh my gosh. So I would definitely recommend that boat tour. And just getting lost, really not having an itinerary, just walk around. Just that tip though, to go to Bellagio in the morning, really, and not too late during the day.
Yeah, for everybody who's not aware, Star Wars Episode 2, that whole scene where Anakin has his awful speech about like the sand is coarse. It's the worst scene of Star Wars ever. My husband's very into Star Wars and like maybe watch it with him. And that entire scene, I'm just looking at him like, who wrote this garbage speech? That was filmed in Lake Como. We did not go there because it is so crowded all the time. I looked it up online. I was like, oh, we should go there because you're a Star Wars nerd. But it is so crowded all the time. They are booked for weddings every weekend from now until eternity. Everyone is just like, you know where we should get married? That balcony over Lake Como with the sand speech. Everyone wants to get there. It's a very, very crowded balcony area in the park, which like, if you ever want to just like see a wedding in Italy, that's where you go. But it's always crowded.
I completely agree. And not only that, I believe that area where Star Wars was filmed was some kind of priest refuge, where essentially priests would go there to take vacations. And on the stairs of that area, it says in, I forget what language, but what happens here stays here. So essentially they could do anything they want in that particular island. So that's why I highly recommend it, because you would not know all that history without that tour. I'm wondering though, if you ask your husband, if he knows Jaina Solo, because that's a Star Wars character. Yeah. And that's the only way some people know my name is the Star Wars character.
I definitely did not know about that character, but I will ask. if he does. I also think that's hilarious that apparently it was like Las Vegas for ancient Vatican priests or something. That is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I was like, no way. And it says it in the stairs. It says in the stairs, basically do anything you want here. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's crazy. So any other tips for anybody who either wants to go to the Como area of Italy or anybody who's looking to use their real estate investments or the refurbishing properties, long-term rentals, being a landlord, any of that to earn points? If you just kind of had to sum up all of your advice, what would you say is the number one takeaway that you've had from earning points through real estate?
It would be just to keep things simple. Find 1 to 3 cards where you realize you have the highest spend categories on and understand that you're using it as a pass-through rather than a way to just accumulate points. Because sometimes you have to understand that there's a lot of different things you have to learn with points and miles. But if you're keeping it simple, right? If you're just using it in a way that it normally meets your regular spend requirements, then that's really the first step. Then after that, personally, a tip I have is I just use Chase points for Hyatt hotels and I use American Express for flights. That's how I like to keep it simple because, like I mentioned again, real estate investors are so busy, a lot of things going on. The simpler, the better.
Yeah, that makes sense. And if you are a real estate investor who spends more than $100,000 a year, we do have a point portfolio management service so that you don't have to worry about that. And you're just like, let me focus on my real estate business. And then someone else take care of the points and then just tell me how to do all of the vacation stuff. We can do that for you. Fantastic advice. And speaking of great advice, can you give a shout out to somebody else on the internet who you would recommend that listeners follow for even more points and miles tips?
I highly recommend Mr. Credit Gems because he does a lot with credit cards, also business funding, and then also using that for travel hacking. So that's definitely up my alley. I love that combination. Highly, highly recommend to check out his content.
Perfect. And where can we find you on the internet?
I'm at Jaina_Ann on Instagram. So JAINA_ANNE.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Jaina, again, so much for coming on to the show today, talking about how real estate investors can earn a ton of points and go to some really amazing places like Italy and first or in business class Emirates and stay near Lake Como. This sounds like an amazing trip, and I'm so excited for you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels! Thank you.